everyone. Welcome back. Thank you for being here. You're listening to Red Ice Radio, and my name is Henrik Palmgren from Sweden. RedIceCreations.com and RedIceMembers.com is the websites where you will find much more of what we do. Author and speaker David Icke is back on the program today to talk about his latest project, the new media channel The People's Voice, and his upcoming book, The Perception Deception. We could, of course, do a lengthy introduction to convey his past achievements and past works, but I think you guys know David Icke by now, so we'll just get straight to it. Welcome back, David Icke. Good to talk to you again. Hope you've been well since we talked last time, David. Welcome back.
Thank you, Henrik. Yeah, it's been quite a while, actually. It's been an incredibly productive time at this end, and I've just finished a book that's gone to the printers called The Perception Deception, which is about 1,000 pages and nearly 1,000 illustrations and images, and is, I think, the best thing I've produced and certainly the most comprehensive. It's a funny thing that I've been working on it for about best part of 2 years with a break to do the Wembley Arena event last year.
Right.
And, you know, when I get into something, I get into something. So it's like, you know, starting at 6 a.m. and going through until I'm falling asleep every day.
I love that feeling.
And so that's gone. And it's one of those books where, you know, when the postman arrives with it, you know, it's going to be on the back of a truck or something, you know. Or he's gonna bring you know one of them weightlifters with him, because his funny thing is, you know, despite that scale of effort and time, it's the easiest book I've ever written. It's big because it connects so many dots, but it's the easiest book I've ever written, and it's like you know, we all have those moments on the journey where suddenly the kaleidoscope moves. And you can see it clearer than you could before the kaleidoscope moved. And I had a few of those happen to me when I was writing it. And then I just finished that, and I thought, going to have a little breather for a couple of weeks. And then I had this idea for a censorship-free internet television radio station, which
right.
I'm calling The People's Voice.
Yeah.
And there was my chill-out time gone, because we were straight into that. And my goodness me, it's... We're trying to get on air by November, and the moment we're on schedule. And my goodness me, you know when you know that if you think too much about something, then there'll be a long list of reasons why you shouldn't do it. And so I knew that if I thought about it too long, that's what would happen. So
would,
I jumped
it would seem
feet.
Too insurmountable and just get, you know, tired of it before you've even begun, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you think, okay, we'll meet each challenge as it comes, as they say in football. We'll play every game as it comes.
Yep.
And that's what we're doing. And, you know, there are many challenges, but, you know, they're being overcome, and you know, we've definitely caught a wave with it because of the synchronicity of things dropping into place so quickly.
Well, that's great. So what was the main kind of thrust? I mean, I want to ask you about the book later too, David, and see what the inspiration and drive for that was in the perspective from the kaleidoscope, as you mentioned. But if we talk about The People's Voice for a little bit, why, you know, what was the deeper drive for that? Is it just, you know, to try to get, I mean, the technology is so advanced at this stage that it's practically capable of giving everyone a voice to get it out there, but you want to kind of amass it onto one network. Is it a network, or what do we call it?
Well, yeah, people can call it what you like. What we're aiming to do is to put this information out in different forms across the whole spectrum of information. 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
If not at the start, and that's what we're planning. But if not at the start, then pretty soon afterwards. So it's a massive ask, and it's a massive project, and you know, it miraculous in many ways in terms of the things that have to happen to make it happen. But they are happening. But what happened, Henrik, is, you know, what I've been doing for the last nearly 25 years since I had my top of my head blew off and saw the world differently is I've been following my intuition. And I have this process, if you like, whereby I'll get a feeling that I need to do something. And what I'll do is I will open the space, if you like, to allow it to happen. I'll give it the chance to manifest, in the sense that I'm not saying, oh no, I'm not doing that, I'm not doing that. I'll just say, okay, this process that people go through where they go, no, that's crazy, I can't do that. I don't do that. Mm. I just say, okay, I'm open to it. And you see if the energy flows with it or whether it doesn't. If it doesn't, you don't go with it. If it does, you go with it. And what actually happened with the people's voice was a ridiculously quick unfolding of this whole project, because I think it was in May, I was visited by a journalist from the UK Sunday Times, this so-called intelligent broadsheet newspaper. Mm-hmm. Forget it. But he arrived with the usual concrete above the neck. He had the story written by the time he arrived. And, you know, the reason I did it, because, you know, it's been a long time since I talked to the media in that way, was because they said it's going to be in our Sunday magazine and it's going to be over many, many pages. So, all right, we'll give you a chance, see if there's any intelligence has broken through. And he turns up, and even though, yes, he was going to write an article over many, many pages, he hadn't read a single page of any of my books.
As usual.
I mean, if you're going to write a quick news story about someone, then you don't expect them to have read your books. But when you're doing a major article over many pages in which you're going to try to dissect this guy and give your opinion on whether he's what he's saying, and of course, yeah, the opinion's always the same. Anyway, he comes along and he leaves, and I thought, you know, after all this time, I've given these idiots a chance, and they've just shown they've not moved an inch. Despite world events and all the things that are confirming what we're saying all the time. So what's the point in talking to the mainstream media? We're never going to get this out through the mainstream media. And synchronicity, again, a friend of mine, Mike Lambert, who runs the Shen Clinic about 5 minutes from my flat, he's a world-class healer. And he called me. He said, on the Isle of Wight, we've got this little island I live on, we've got a version of eBay called White Bay, which is basically an internet car boot sale, as we call them in Britain.
Right.
And garage sale, as they would call them in America. So he said, there's an internet radio station for sale, £500. What? Anyway, it wasn't for us, because the size of it just wouldn't work, but you know, this guy, you know, done his best to create it and
right.
stuff like that. But it wasn't that was the key. It was the idea. Well, why don't we? Why don't we create with, as you say, the technology now? We've kind of created. Well, we're in the positive version of a perfect storm, because the technology's available now to put internet television on the television in the front room. But by staying on the internet, you've dramatically reduced your costs, and you don't, up to this point anyway, get caught in the regulation of what you might call mainstream television, which says what you can and cannot say.
Yeah.
Because in terms of the idea and what was happening when I was getting the idea, these words were just going around. Sitting in this very chair, funnily enough, these words kept going around my head, the people's voice, the people's voice, the people's voice, the people's voice. I thought, I'll have that one. That's good. I'll have that. So that's what we've called it. And my whole point in going for this was, A, it had to be technologically the best we can do, something that is not two people with a can at their ear with a piece of string between it, but actually serious technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to raise a lot of money to do that, because we could have raised a small amount of money and done a bit, but you know, other people are doing radio shows and stuff like that. What's the point in repeating what's already there? We need to take it further. Otherwise, there's no point in doing it.
Right.
And so I never heard of these crowdsourcing websites. I never heard of crowdsourcing. But, you know, Sean, my partner in this, it's a non-profit making operation. It all goes into the station. There's no share, dividends for shareholders and all that stuff. And But he had heard of these crowdsourcing things. And we tried one called Kickstarter, which is probably the biggest in the world. And they turned us down because we didn't meet their criteria. Well, we did. So that would be some other reason. Yeah. That's weird. Ridiculous decision. Anyway, then we tried, I think it's the second biggest, Indiegogo. And they took us with open arms. And we asked for an initial £100,000, which I made the point at the time is the absolute minimum of the minimum of the minimum to go on air, and it wouldn't have been anything like what we wanted. But we ended up the enthusiasm and the support for it was extraordinary. We ended up in just over a month having £300,000 donated, with $500,000. So right. the capital is there to get the technology. We're just securing a studio now in London, actually as I speak almost, which we're going to complete the deal next week. And we have many of the presenters that we want to do for live programs out of the UK and out of America, and others around the world as well. When I look at when the idea came, in what, late May time, kind of that time, to where we are now, not even mid-August. It's just ridiculous. Just ridiculous. Yeah. And we've got people at the moment, Sean and the core people, which not very many, this is why the workload is fantastic. They're in America as we're talking, sorting that side of it out. It's one of those things where, you know, it is so ridiculous in what we're trying to do in the time we're trying to do it that we'll probably end up doing it. You know what I mean? It's when you sit around and think, oh, no, you can't do that. Oh, no, that's too hard. Oh, no, you'll never do that. Well, let's just have a go, shall we? And all I can say to people is we're going to have a go and see where it goes, because, you know, We're going to go on air almost certainly in November, not knowing where it's going. We don't know what the income stream is going to be to keep it going, because you know, we, like I say, we don't want to mess about. You know, what we're planning is a live 3-hour breakfast program out of the UK, and every program's global. It might come out of the UK, but it's a global. I mean, you know, if something in Australia is the biggest story of the day, that's what we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have a 3-hour live show out of London between about 5 and 8 with an absolutely brilliant mainstream journalist who's just so sick of the shackles of mainstream journalism. She's tremendously experienced, brilliant journalist should be, Sonia Poulton. She's going to be doing that. And then we're going to have a 2-hour program, live program out of America every day, and then live programs for 2-3 hours out of Britain and America at the weekends. What I'm working on, it is really one of the things that I really, really want to do. And it's not easy, but I want to do a live program once a week for at least a couple of hours based on the Middle East. I want to give a voice to the voiceless and the silenced in the Middle East to tell their story, which never gets out through the mainstream media. Ideally, what we want to get kind of live streaming technology into places like Gaza, so people can speak direct to the public without anything in between. Because my philosophy is that apart from libel, which is fair enough, because we need to stay on air, and B, we don't want to say anything about anyone that isn't true anyway. But apart from libel, there will be no censorship. And it will be very, very interesting to see what happens when that energy is unleashed. You know, it's not say what you like and don't be challenged. But we'll challenge what is said with incisive, intelligent, informed questioning and debate, not by saying you're not going to be allowed to say it. You know, this is this, so you see where I'm going, in the sense of I wanted this to be something different, something that really took the shackles off, and not only that, went across the whole spectrum of suppressed information and suppressed people. So, for instance, it's not just going to be about conspiracy and alternative health and all these subjects that we talk about. It's actually going to give we're getting a whole department, if you like, together, and there'll be a few at the core who work full time, who will be paid. Not me. I'm doing it completely without payment, not just now, but ongoing. I will not take a penny. We get in a group of people, and they're volunteers, but with experience and passion for the subject, to create programs that give bands, musicians, poets, comedians, artists of various kinds, the platform to express their talent, express their view, express their uniqueness, express what they've got to say through their various means. And these are people that the corporations wouldn't even go near. And the other thing we want to do, I've got programs in mind like the People's Video. This is these are programs where we show videos on various subjects that have been made by members of the public. I mean, you know, as we all do that are in this arena, that, you know, you can go on the internet and some person you've never heard of from some, you know, obscure place in the Midwest or something puts a video on YouTube about a particular subject, and you think that's freaking brilliant. There's so much talent out there that is not getting an audience of the size that it deserves, and what we want to do is to produce programs from this material and get people on the air to talk about why they made it. What is it about this subject? What information have you got to share with us about this subject? We want people that make documentaries. We're already being offered some great documentaries that have had very, very small audiences so far, and we can expand on that. And so it's exciting thing. And my great interest is to see what happens to the energy and the dynamic once people realize, hey, we can actually say what we think. Because, you know, when people like me go on to the mainstream media, with the odd exception, the person that's interviewing you, they seem to think it's their duty to make you putting over your case and your information as difficult as possible.
Yeah.
So they'll ask you a question, and you get halfway through the first sentence, and they're in with another one.
Oh,
and
sure.
it's like oh, we've got, you know, and you know, my philosophy on journalism and communication is simply this. Yes, you ask incisive questions, but you let the person answer them. And the judge of what the person's saying should not be the interviewer, usually in the mainstream media, completely ignorant of the subject anyway. They should be the listener or the viewer.
That's right.
You know, let the person speak. Ask questions you think that the viewer would ask in the light of what the person said, but then let the viewer or the listener be the judge for themselves, not for everybody, for themselves, of the validity of what that person is saying.
Absolutely.
So when people come on the People's Voice saying what will be perceived as far out things, we're not going to say, okay, well, okay, we'll just say what you like and that's it. We'll be saying, well, hold on a second. What about this and what about that? And how do you explain that? And all that stuff. But we're going to do it in a respectful way.
Yeah.
A way that allows people to say what they've got to say in a space where they don't feel threatened, where they don't feel that they have to go on the defensive because they're being aggressively challenged. That's not going to happen.
Very important.
To people like that. And what happens then is when people feel they're in a space where they can say what they like and that's going to be respected, not necessarily agreed with, but respected, then you get the best of people and you get the flow coming out of people that you wouldn't get otherwise. So there's some of the ethos of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, well, exactly. You're so right. It's really about creating that kind of environment. And, you know, just as I say, you by challenging and questioning, of course, you know, why a person has come to the conclusions they have, and you're urged to inquire where the information comes from, et cetera. But when you do that in that process and in that manner, I think you manage to lay it out so much more, you know, better for the audience as well to get an understanding of where it comes from. What mainstream media does is that they shut that down, that process right away. And if it happens to be something that actually makes sense in any way, then, you know, the expert comes on 5 minutes later and breaks down for you why this guy's wrong or what have you. You know?
Oh, yeah. Or they wheel them out, the professional kind of demolishers. And that's another interesting area because, you know, we're going to have science programs that are going to look at science in a dispassionate way. In other words, we're going to look at the evidence rather than the song sheet. And what we want on some of those programs is to get these mainstream scientists on. Because what happens, as you well know, in the mainstream media environment is the so-called expert, because he's articulating the norms. He went to university. He's a professor.
Appeals authority.
Know what he's talking about. Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, what did you think about this? Oh, I thought it was a load of rubbish. Oh, thank you, professor. Now the now the weather. What never happens or very rarely happens is that they're questioned on their beliefs.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
So what we want to do is get these people on, and again in a respectful way, not that the way they treat us when we go on mainstream programs, say, hold on a second, what about this? What about that? What about the other? And what will happen, because the mainstream science is a house built on sand, shifting sand actually, a tidal wave going through sand. So, you know, these things will come out. Actually, they don't know what they're talking about. But that will only happen when we have an environment in which the pursuit of truth for truth's sake is there, rather than coming from this person must be crazy or on the make because he's saying something that is at odds with mainstream society.
Well, there has to be a dialogue between these areas as well. Otherwise, all that will happen is an intense polarization, and you'll have two camps at each other's throats fighting with each other, and that's never going to solve anything. So why not exactly open up? That's been my philosophy as well, is try to, you know, bridge that gap a little bit and see, and again, let the audience decide for themselves, all right, what makes more sense with the time that we had available to present the different sides and everything, you know? And I think that that just, well, it's going to lead to a more intelligent audience as well, I believe. Where they can reason for themselves. Otherwise, again, we're just back to either you're preaching to the choir on, you know, group A, or you're preaching to the choir for group B. And what does it matter then if no one evolves watching the stuff? You know, what does it matter, right?
Exactly. And that's why as much as we can, and I say as much as we can, because to do what we want to do in this arena, people with mainstream views need to agree to come on and talk about them. And, you know, there will be some reticence from some of them because they'll think, hold on a second, I'm not going to get a free ride here with my views. I'm going to have to justify them.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, people would be amazed to see some of these pillars of the scientific establishment under questioning about their beliefs when it becomes clear that actually – They don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you get people like Professor Richard Dawkins, the Oxford University, who's almost made it his life's work up to this point anyway to rubbish alternative healing and alternative versions of reality, saying that the reality is not malleable, but at the same time saying that his knowledge of quantum physics is foggy. If ever I've heard pseudoscience, it's that. And yet that's the great line that they throw at people who are challenging scientific orthodoxy, which is, it is pseudoscience.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
What I want to do is to get people together and say, well, okay, let's just debate this in a relaxed way, and let's see where the pseudoscience lies. And you're right. You see, what has happened with science, because it's been hijacked and taken over and the song sheet written, and it's policed by who gets the funding and who gets the kudos and who gets the credibility factor within the scientific community, so that people who speak the norms, they get the titles and the funding and all the rest of it.
Very collectivized, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one gets marginalized. Funny enough, I was talking at a music festival well, the other week, really, in England, called The Secret Garden Party. And I talked for an hour, and when I went on the stage to talk, I didn't know what I was going to say. I didn't think about it, and I did that consciously. I thought, I'm just going to let this flow. But I knew I was going to start, and what I did was just write down a few official dictionary definitions of certain key words, because the theme of this music festival was superstition. And I find it fascinating when you take words and you look at their official definition and you break them down. It tells you a heck of a lot about the energy and the perceptions that surround the use of language.
Yeah.
So I started. It's funny. I didn't expect I was going to talk about this today, Henrik. But I just looked across, and just to my left is the crumpled up bits of paper that I actually wrote these definitions on. I think they call it synchronicity.
Ah.
Anyway, I took superstition, and that is, according to the official definition, an irrational belief that an object, action, or circumstance not logically related to a course of events influences its outcome. An irrational belief that an object, action, or circumstance not logically related to a course of events influences its outcome.
Right.
It's also defined as a belief, practice, or right irrationally maintained by ignorance of the laws of nature or by faith in magic or chance. And also it is a fearful or abject state of mind resulting from such ignorance and irrationality. So I then went to the definitions of these key words that keep coming up. Irrational and logical. Irrational is something, it says, not endowed with reason and affected by loss of usual or normal mental clarity. And it is marked by a lack of accord with reason, this word keeps coming up, or sound judgment. How often do you hear a Richard Dawkins or people of that ilk say about alternative ways of looking at things, it is without reason, it doesn't have reason.
Always, always.
So then you go to reason. And reason is defined as a normal mental state and sanity. So to have reason is to have a normal mental state. You then go to logic, which is a system of reasoning, the formal guiding principles of a discipline, school, or science. And finally, we come to the big one, which is normal.
Yeah. Right.
Normal is conforming to a norm, standard, or pattern and being typical. It is relating or characterized by average intelligence. So if you're normal, you officially have average intelligence. I'm glad I'm not normal. And normal is defined as being free from mental illness and being sane.
Yeah.
And rational, obviously the opposite of irrational, is having or exercising the ability to reason, being of sound mind, sane, and being consistent or based on reason, logical. So then when you bring these words together, these recurring words to rubbish alternative thinking and alternative views of reality in all its forms, it comes down to them being having a lack of reason, not being logical, and being irrational. The point I was making at this music festival is, but what do they mean? What do they mean? Everything and every perception is a point of observation. It is a point of observation from a certain perception of reality and a certain perception of possibility. Therefore, from mainstream science's perception of possibility, basically, although they know and have to, unfortunately, and they it's their worst nightmare, but they have to acknowledge that quantum physics and such like exists, but then they just, as we say in Britain, cock a deafen and ignore the fact that it does exist when they carry on with their particular discipline. So we have a situation where they are, from their point of perception, looking at the world from the point of view that basically the world is solid, that everything's apart from everything else, that what you see is what you get, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And from that point of view, that is their version of reason, logic, sanity, normal, and rational. But when you move to another point of observation, which says that actually the world is not solid, it's holographic, that everything is connected to everything else because everything in the end is one infinite awareness having different experiences through different points of observation, different points of attention, then you start to realize that the base form of everything is energy. In our reality, it's waveform information. And what we're seeing as the so-called physical world is merely a holographic projection of that information. Now, from that point of view, the reason, logic, and normal perception of everything that comes from the mainstream science point of attention, observation, and awareness is anything but reasonable, anything but logical. It's ridiculous because simple thing. So one of the points I made at this event, if you come from the mainstream scientific view, which I've just described, homeopathy is impossible. It's the fact that it has any validity is impossible. And so from that point of reason, they say you cannot dilute a substance over and over again until there's none of the substance left and for it to have any effect. That's ridiculous. Why do they say that? Because they don't understand reality and all they can think of is physical when there is no physical. And thus, when the physical in their perception of reality, i.e. the substance, is diluted into something they cannot any longer measure, it must be impossible to have any effect. But then when you go to the other point of reason where people like me are coming from, you find that actually the universe, the reality that we're experiencing, is simply information. It's information interacting with information. It's information being encoded, information being decoded, and the dynamic of that is the reality that we experience and many realities that we are subconsciously experiencing. And so when you look at the experiments, for instance, at the Aerospace Institute in Stuttgart, Germany, where they found a way of photographing information in droplets of water. They took a flower. You can see this on the internet. Water has a memory. Aerospace Institute in Stuttgart. It's about a few minutes video which shows all this happening. I'm going to explain.
Yeah.
So when what they did is they got a flower and they put it in a tank of water. Just a big tank of water, put the flower in, then they took it out. And then they took individual droplets of water and they identified the information in the droplets. Every single droplet had the flower in them. Every single one. And then they got, even though the physical, quote, flower had gone, the information of the flower was still there. So then they got people from the local community to come. And they got a big tank of water, and they asked people, each one, to take four droplets of water from this big tank of water, put it in a little dish with their name on, and then they, again, looked at the information in the droplets. In every single case, the four droplets were basically the same. I used a photograph of some of them in my last book. Are the same. They look the same, but every four droplets is totally different to all the other four droplets. In other words, the process of someone, an energetic field we call human, interacting with the energetic field we call the water, that energetic interchange has impregnated itself upon the droplets of water in the time it takes to go, thank you, I'll have that one drop, I'll put it here. Now, so when you look from that point of view, it's not the substance that can be measured that is doing the healing, when it's used properly, in homeopathy. It's the information of the substance, which is its base form. The substance that you can measure and see is merely the holographic projection of the information. All that's happening in homeopathy is they go down to the information level. And I tell you what, Henrik, most homeopaths won't know this. Because I've talked to some of them. Mm-hmm. They don't really know why it works. They just know it does. Well, right. This is why it works when you get it right. And so from that point of view, homeopathy is perfectly logical, and it is quite obviously has reason. But from the other point of view of mainstream science, it's neither logical or has reason. Why? Simple thing, nothing more. Point of observation, awareness of reality. And this is going on all the time. And what is taught in the schools, in the universities, what is poured out on the media all the time, the mainstream version of everything. And therefore, when you have interviewers interviewing people who are coming from a different view of reality and everything, they are coming from the point of reason and logic, actually no reason and illogical point of view, that mainstream science is coming from. Therefore, they cannot work out how what you say could possibly have any validity. And this is how the system works. It's so simple. If you can impose and make your norms the prime arbiter of truth, no truth, possibility, or no possibility, then you can entrap the minds and perceptions of billions of people.
Yes.
And that is what is happened.
Exactly.
And that's why, if we're going to get round this, we have to find ways, this is what I'm trying to do with the People's Voice, we have to find ways of presenting information in a way that not only talks about homeopathy, but talks about why it works. You see, this is what I've been doing all these years. This is just the way my mind works. I want to know why. When I realized that a few people were manipulating world events, I wanted to know how they did it. Because by understanding how they did it, first of all, it gives you a great chance of stopping them doing it. But by understanding how they do it, you can overcome this massive chasm of public perception when you talk about a few controlling the world, where they say, how can a few people control billions? It's ridiculous. But if you can explain how they do it logically and with reason, and you can, then that chasm is removed, because people not only see that or are told that it is happening, they can see how it can happen. And that's, in my experience over the years, that is a massively powerful thing in getting people to go, well, hold on a second, let me have another look at this then.
Well, exactly. I mean, what scares me about this, though, is that reality has become so homogenized. I mean, according to the definitions that you mentioned, you know, this is about, again, going back to collectivizing reality. Just do as everyone else does in your cult culture, and you're going to be conceived you know, as the normal one, and as long as you're within that boundary, you're fine. And if we're with the knowledge that has been preconceived and accepted, if you will, then that's going to be considered to be fine. But as soon as you have something challenging that, nope, we're going to disqualify it by default. And it's not that you can't be skeptical and all that. What's interesting here as well is that all the things that you are talking about here and digging out are things that are coming also from the scientific field. These are results that are coming from the very own world that they are, advocating for. But at the same time, they've decided to just keep that out, shut it off, don't look at it more. And I read this about when you talked about the Stuttgart water memory thing here as well. There, people that are fighting that one online now as well. But it's just a myth. Don't look at that. It's all, so this is what you're stuck with. But the bottom line is that people have to be free in their own minds, and they have to have to have a different point of view, as you said, on reality, if they so please. It doesn't mean that they are correct, but it doesn't mean that they're by default wrong either. We're trusting objective reality to people's senses ultimately and their ability to document reality properly. And as that's even that has been shown to not work, you know, by a simple thing like telephone or what have you, that people's ability to remember things and events, and then we'd rely on those things to document it, etc. It becomes more fuzzy, if you will, David.
Yeah, but it's not only about, you know, people having a view and is it right or wrong. I think it's also important that we encompass the apparently paradoxical to see that it's not paradoxical. You see, you know, you can, for instance, you can look at a house very, very close up so that all you can see is one brick. And you can say, actually, this is a very, very hard substance. It's a reddish color and all that stuff. And that's all it is. There's nothing to it. It's just hard and it's reddish. Yeah, that's it. Then you can be on the top of the hill a mile away, and you can see that that brick is part of a house, which is part of a street, which is part of a town, etc.
Yeah.
And both are true.
Yeah.
It's only the point that you're viewing them from that is different. So there are many things that people say about reality, and on one level, it's true. But if you go to another level, then it's actually the opposite is what you see. But at the point of experiencing, both are true. It's just the point that you're looking at it from. And we don't encompass this because people have this almost this fear of not being absolute with everything. You know, I've noticed that when people are in a situation where there's a state of flux, either in what's happening to them or in their perceptions of something, they get uneasy. And they need to solidify it into an absolute to feel comfortable.
Right. Yeah.
And within infinite reality, when we're experiencing all possibility, there are no absolutes. There's only what you're experiencing in the moment.
Well, exactly. And that's why it was called the uncertainty principle, you know, the whole quantum physics field from the beginning, because it's uncertain, right? And that's why they're uncomfortable with it, you know?
Yeah, and if you look at the whole mentality of mainstream science, it is looking for absolutes all the time. It's looking for, I can tick every box and I can give you chapter and verse why this is true. And you know, the equivalent of looking at a brick and not realizing what it's part of is looking at this world and thinking it's physical. And if you know, I've gone into this in this new book, The Perception Deception, because it's very, very interesting, and I think extremely significant that this whole thing about the world being solid, the world not being solid, is absolutely fundamental. Because if you know, like I say, they have to acknowledge quantum physics because it exists, but once they've acknowledged it, they then ignore it. My knowledge of it's a bit foggy, but anyway, I can still talk in absolute terms about the nature of reality. And when you look at this, world is solid, which is the whole basis of it. Well, what that does, it dictates scientific policy. It dictates health policy because they don't know what the human body really is, so they don't know how to heal it. You see, if you're dealing with a hologram thinking it's physical, and you're treating the hologram at the level of the hologram, thinking it's physical, then all you can do, you cannot possibly do anything else other than treat the symptom, not the cause. Because the cause is a flaw in the information blueprint from which the hologram is projected, thus there is a flaw in the hologram.
Yeah.
And thus, what do alternative, healers and methods of healing say that mainstream medicine treats the symptom, not the cause? Well, when you look at it from the perspective I've just described, Henrik, it cannot do anything other than that. And therefore, when you are dealing with alternative healing, which is looking to balance the information blueprint, and thus, by definition, balance its projected illusion we call the physical body, then if you don't accept that there is any energetic blueprint, and mainstream medicine doesn't, then anyone that's talking that way is a nutter to you, crazy. What are they talking about? They're talking a foreign language. And what happens is this. Once you hijack, indeed not hijack, but create from the start, what we call mainstream education, you've created the foundation blueprint sausage machine from which everything else comes.
Right.
So you take a child from the earliest possible age, it seems to be getting younger than now all the time,
yeah,
and then you take them through to their teenage years. And in that period, you have got almost complete control, because the media is just repeating what you're saying anyway, almost complete control of the information they receive to give them a fix on everything, including the nature of reality and the nature of themselves. Now, if you accept this programming really powerfully, and you regurgitate this programming down onto a piece of paper, you pass your exams, you become very, very successful. And so then you go to an elite university and all this goes on again. And then you leave your university and you go into your specialization. You might go into science. So when you enter science, you've already completely bought, with rare exceptions, you've completely bought the whole ethos of mainstream science, because you've just been learning about that all your formative years. Well, you might become a doctor. Well, you've already bought the ethos of medicine, because the basis of it, you've been taught all the way through your formative years. You go into the media, you become a journalist, you've bought the ethos of the system, and thus you report everything from the point of view of the system's version of everything, and people that say something different by definition are mad, bad, or all the rest of it. You go into the corporations, you go into all these different areas of the system from this education system, and you already are software programs of the system being plugged into different parts of the system.
Yeah.
And what that does is then police those institutions of people who maybe have not bought the whole program and are questioning the program. And they're the ones that get targeted, that get harassed, that lose funding, and all the rest of it. You know, the way the system has been structured is all about the hijacking of perception.
It's a virtual reality. That's what this is. I mean, we've disconnected ourselves from reality, created a complete different bubble that we're basically living in, or most people are living in now. It's disconnected from nature. It has nothing to do with the fundamental drives of what makes the universe tick. But it's a software program, as you say. It's a virtual reality and exists inside the mind of most people who are walking around in this bubble. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, I've said this before, and the more I observe the world, with the increasing numbers of people that are waking up from the program, accepted, of course, but it's more and more obvious to me that this program is so powerful, and it starts with parents, because, you know, you leave the womb and you enter an already programmed environment 99% of the time, because the parents have been through this system, and they pass on the programming to their children, not overwhelmingly out of malevolence, but because they think it's the right thing for the children, because that's what they believe that it is. And so the programming goes all the way through, and it's very, very powerful, to the point where it is my view that vast, vast numbers of people, I'd say the vast majority, it's changing, but the vast majority, go through an entire lifetime in this reality without having an original thought or emotional response.
Yeah.
It's all coming from the program. When people say they wake up, I woke up. Well, they did. They woke up from the trance, which is the software program. And what do they say then? They say, why didn't I see it before? Because it's so obvious when you go beyond the program. But the program is, when you're in the program, the program's telling you what to see and what not to see. And it doesn't want you to see that it's a program.
Sure.
So, so round and round the garden we go.
Yeah.
And the only way of escaping the program, in my view, is to move from mind into consciousness. And these are words, and we use them in different definitions of what we mean. What I call mind is that which is dominated in its perception of reality by the five senses. And that I call mind. And then consciousness is that which is beyond that. It's all the same thing in the end, but consciousness has a different point of attention within infinite awareness to mind, whose point of attention is dominated by the five senses. And the idea, you know, if you get to the bottom line of this whole conspiracy, and I call the new book The Perception Deception, because that's what it is. The whole thing's about the deceiving perception manipulating perception, because once you've got someone's perception, you've got their behavior. Yeah. You've got their responses. You've got their emotional responses. You've got their mental responses. This is what it's all about. And if you are dominated by the five senses, and if you look at this society, everything is watch this, touch this, feel this, listen to this. It's all enticing the five senses in. The idea, the whole foundation of this whole global conspiracy is to pull our point of attention into the five senses. Because once you do that and it dominates your reality to the point where you can't hear or be influenced by your greater consciousness, then you're not going to have that beyond this world filter of information and experience to give yourself a bigger picture fix on what's happening and why. You're dominated in your perception by what the five senses are decoding, and therefore, once the system has disconnected people from an influence of the greater consciousness and isolated their point of attention in mind-body, then that isolated fragment of awareness is then through the five senses, through the media, the education system, parental influence, and all these things we're talking about, it can then program that isolated mind-body awareness to see the world and itself in a way that suits the agenda. And this is how it's done. You know, we can talk about banking scams, and we can talk about 9/11s and all these things, and we should, absolutely. My goodness me, I've been doing it for the best part of a quarter of a century. Of course we have to talk about that. But if we only talk about that, we are in effect like the doctor who is only treating the symptom and not the cause. The cause is the hijacking of human perception. And that's what we have to get back. And when we get that back, then everything else follows.
Very good. Now, David, let's take a short break here, a good moment to take a few minutes also to talk about some sources here before we do that. Your website, of course, is davidicke.com. I think most people listening will be aware of that. But if not, davidicke.com is the website. But also then tell us any ETA on the perception deception, when that will be available. And also, of course, we need to talk about where people will be able to tune in to the people's voice as well. So let's talk about that, David.
Okay, well, the Perception Deception has just gone to the printers. It's gone to the printers today. And so, you know, it takes quite a lot of long time in the production process. I mean, I'd like it out tomorrow, but it should be circulating in October.
October, yeah.
Which is a month before we planned, which is good. And so that will be out then. The People's Voice will be a section of davidicke.com. So that we have to run one website instead of two, which with the people involved becomes very much easier.
Yeah.
So it will be a whole section of that, very much like, you know, other websites do it, where they have a radio show and the radio show is part of, is part of the website, but it's not going to be David Icke's voice. It's going to be the people's voice. I'm not having to show on it. People say, "Oh, there'll be a David Icke show." No, they won't.
well, you got to have that, David. Come on.
It's not what I want to do. I mean, I'll be appearing on it because I've researched so many subjects, but I won't have a show, and I won't, you know, hello, good evening, welcome, and all that stuff. I want other people to do that. I want other people who have talent and have knowledge to be given a platform, and I want as many members of the public to be involved in the information that's shared and circulated. So I ain't going to be there dominating the whole thing. Absolutely not. It's the last thing I want to do. And I do other things in my life anyway, like researching and writing books and all these other things. And there's another Wembley Arena event next year and stuff like that. So. It's not going to be David Icke's voice, but it's going to be a section of the davidicke.com.
All right, very good. The People's Voice then, and also then heads up on the Perception Deception. You can keep your eye on davidicke.com for much more on that. Stay with us, David, and everyone else listening. We'll be back here in just a little bit. We'll take a short break. We have another hour loaded with further analysis of our current predicament with David Icke coming up. He'll speak more about his upcoming book and the false science which most people let define their reality. We talk about how most people actually live in a virtual reality already. They reject information by reflex reaction, while the rulers are trying to create predictable collectivists who all behave in the same way. Later, David discusses the source of creativity, and we end the discussion on internet censorship, specifically in the UK, and why this approach ultimately will fail. To continue to listen, go to redicemembers.com, our members' website, and acquire a subscription there. All our programs in their entirety are available there for you. We have shows going back to 2006, and one of those first programs we did, by the way, was with David, and we have about 10 great interviews with Icke in the archives, together with 700 plus other programs on many different topics, all designed to make you question our spoon-fed realities. I hope you enjoy that. Upcoming on Red Ice Radio, we have Warren McLaughlin on The Dark Side of Finland, a follow-up to our programs on the Nordic model and the situation in Scandinavia. After this, Nathan Fraser, Charles Eisenstein, Fraud Rex, and Suzanne Venker, to name a few. We'll talk to you and David right after the break. Thank you for listening.